Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
And a good Saturday morning to you. Welcome to another edition of our Smart Garden Show this morning. Master Gardener Teresa Rooney answering all of those lawn and garden questions. Teresa, good morning.
Good morning, Denny. It's so nice to be here with you today.
Well, it's always great to have you on the radio with us, and the listeners love it as well. How about this summer weather?
We have had pretty nice summers so far, and this weather is absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, really is, to continue. If you're a regular listener to the show, you know how busy we tend to get. A lot of questions for our listeners, not only phones, but text messages as well. So if you do have any kind of a lawn or garden question, we'd love to hear from you. You want to call Teresa or send a text. Either way, just one number will get you either. 651-461-9226. Let's see. Where do we begin here? All right. When my lilacs were hit by this virus, the leaves turned black and dried up. It looked like I lost the tree, but now, out of the blue, I have green leaves coming back and have some lilacs blooming. What's going on? We're hearing a lot about this.
We're hearing a lot about this. So if your lilac was hit with one of those two fungal lilac diseases, just clean up all of the leaves as much as you can, the leaves that fell. And then just treat the plant as gently as you can. If we go droughty, give it some water. Don't fertilize it. Don't do any major pruning, but you can take out any dead stuff. And we're seeing a lot of re-blooming lilacs and other spring blooming plants. You know, it's just enjoy the extra blooms. The plants are as confused as we are about the weather. And they're not going to bloom a full bloom like they do in the spring. But what blooms now, that again won't bloom next spring. So you'll have a little less maybe flowers next year. But your plants should be fine. Just treat them carefully. Give them all the love you can. And go to the Extension website, extension.umn.edu. We talk about the reblooming of the spring plants. And there is also some links for the lilac disease.
All right, very good. Let us grab a phone call, Teresa. Jim is checking in from Maplewood this morning, I believe. Jim, thank you. What is your question for Teresa?
I have two questions about emerald ash borer. I heard a guy from a tree service saying that he cut down a tree that had multiple tags on it for being treated for emerald ash borer, but the bug got in anyway. And the other question is, this man also stated that he'd seen emerald ash borer in other trees. Any reaction on that?
Okay, so when emerald ash borer first came out, I thought it was supposed to go to other trees sometimes too. I suppose the insects can go to another tree if there's no ash trees around. They won't be as effective, and so I don't think that's a major worry that we have yet. And as to being treating your tree and it still gets emerald ash borer and then has to be taken down, the treatments are as preventative as they can be, but they're not 100% guarantee. So it can happen. I had that with my elm tree, obviously not emerald ash borer, but my elm tree did get infected with the Dutch elm disease, even though I was treating it. It just happens sometimes. The trees are so stressed or the pest is so present that it actually overcomes some of that preventative that the people have put into the trees. So it can happen. It may happen, and it's just something that we have to deal with and plant a variety of trees to keep our urban forests as healthy as possible.
Very good. 651-461-9226. Texter says, any tips for reusing the soil from my pots?
Oh, sure. First of all, you don't have to reuse, you don't have to dump the whole thing. Next year, if you haven't had any diseases in there, you can just take out maybe a third of it, dump all the pots in a big container, mix them all up with some new soil, maybe some new compost, new potting soil and new compost, and then refill all your pots so you're not having to refill the entire pot every year. If it has a disease in it, then you do want to get rid of that soil and not reuse it. Otherwise, you can just, and if you want to, and if you want to start with fresh soil, you can just sprinkle that soil around your shrubs in a very small layer. You can also sprinkle it on your lawn in a low area if you want, and then seed over that. It's a great time to be reseeding your lawns. So you can reuse the soil if it's not been filled with diseases and other parts of your yard if you want to, or just amend and start over fresh next year with old soil and partially new soil.
Very good. Another phone call. This one, Ken, calling in from White Bear Lake this morning. Ken, thanks for calling. What's your question for Teresa?
Yes, I planted some cucumbers in some containers, and the foliage is beautiful, loaded with yellow flowers on one side of a cucumber.
Oh, no.
What's going on there?
Well, you want to make sure that the flowers you're seeing are male flowers, or I'm sorry, female flowers, because you need some males and some female flowers. If the pollinators are not coming in to pollinate, you have to play bee and you have to pollinate. So you have to take a male flower and brush it up against a bunch of female flowers so that you can transfer that pollen to the female flowers so that the cucumbers can start. Sometimes really hot weather prevents the bees from flying, the pollinators from flying. Rainy weather, if you just keep having rain and rain and rain, that will do it. And if the plant is not producing enough flowers, male and female, you're not going to get the pollination either. So those are some things that you can look for. Ken, good luck with that.
Okay. Listener wants to know, when should I move and divide hardy, permanently outdoor hibiscus plants, spring before growth appears or fall after the frost?
I would do it the very first thing in the spring. And what you're going to find, though, is that those hibiscus are very, they wake up very late. They come out of dormancy very late. You sometimes don't even see them until the end of June, mid-June. So mark them well and then dig carefully in the spring as soon as the ground is thawed out. And so you don't chop into the roots too much. And then just lift them and move them to where you want them. A nice sunny area with a nice fertile soil and you should be fine.
Okay. Lawn question this morning, Teresa. What can be done about rust in the lawn?
Well, what is rust? It's a fungal kind of disease. So think of rust on your car. It's because it gets wet, it gets kind of damaged. So what you can do is if you are overhead watering or you have a sprinkler system, make sure it's going off early in the morning if you need it, and that it sprinkles and gives your lawn a good drink, and then it can dry out that day. You don't want to water in the night so the foliage stays wet for a long time. That's the best thing to do, and just try to keep it from being wet all the time. That's the best thing to do. I would also say go to the Extension website, extension.umn.edu, and click on the lawn page, and you can find some really good information about that, about how to handle the rust too. If you are mowing from one area to another, maybe do the rusty area last, and then clean your lawnmower very well and very carefully so you're not moving that rust all throughout your yard too. And never cut the grass when it's wet.
All right. Interesting. Don't cut the lawn when it's wet. Interesting.
Yeah, you don't want to be in your garden when it's wet. You don't want to be playing with plants when they're wet, because the foliage, you can kind of damage the foliage, but you're also moving all those diseases around really easy as you move through the system.
All right. Teresa, hang on. We're going to take a bit of a break here and be right back. If you have any kind of a lawn or a garden question for Master Gardener Teresa Rooney, call us or text us at 651-461-9226. Few showers reported here in the Twin Cities. Our temperature reading still 69 degrees, heading to near 78 today, near 86 tomorrow. Stay with us here on News Talk 830 WCCO. And good Saturday morning to you. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show here on CCO every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour. This morning, Master Gardener Teresa Rooney is answering those lawn and garden questions. And Teresa, you and I always like to talk about the Master Gardener program, and maybe for folks that maybe missed it, maybe interested, tell us, give us a little bit of background.
I love the Master Gardener program. I will talk your ear off, but I'll try not to do that. But this is a really exciting time of year for the Master Gardeners, because this is when we've opened up registration for everybody to become a Master Gardener. And a Master Gardener is somebody who loves to learn about gardening, loves to share that information with their neighbors, and loves to learn scientifically based, research based information that they want to share with their community. And if you think that's you, then please go to the Extension website and click on How to Become a Master Gardener. It will talk you right through it. The applications close by October 1st, so we have to have your application in by October 31st. I'm sorry, October 1st. So you only have 16, 17 days, whatever it is. You don't have a lot of time. But you apply to the Master Gardener program. If you're accepted into the program, you will be given a lot of support. There's a core course that you take. It's 40 to 60 hours it's going to take you. It's all self-driven on the computer. There's a lot of people to help you. If you don't have good computer skills, or if you have really good computer skills but you have some questions, Master Gardeners will meet. There's a lot of support. We have here in Hennepin County, we have a good internship program. So we match you with people that want to be your intern, your friend, the first 1 or 2 years when you're becoming a Master Gardener. So the first year you would go through core course, you would take all your tests. They're very easy. They're open book. Don't worry about it. It's easy to do. Then you do your 50 hours of volunteer work, which seems like a lot, but it's very easy. There's lots of opportunities and lots of supports, whether you take 1 or 2 years to complete that. And then you become a certified Master Gardener. And every year after that, you only need 25 hours of volunteer work, but most people do a lot more because they love it so much. So go online. There's scholarship help available. This program is open to anybody in the state of Minnesota. So go online. There is background checks. If you're going to work with children, you do have to work with do a children work safely or whatever it is, working with children program. But there's a lot of things that are just wonderful. I can't say enough good enough things about it. And you get to hang out with other people who might be as geeky as you are about gardening. Which is our secret kind of passion.
So get online. Extension.umn.edu, the Master Gardener program. Now, I want to ask you, and I realize the term younger is relative, but are there younger people and maybe more guys getting involved here?
There are. It used to be mostly just older people after retirement, and all they wanted to do was grow roses. And now we have a wide variety of people. So if you have a passion for local food or food justice or community gardens or growing roses or growing the perfect apple, you can funnel that passion. You can learn more about it. And we're getting a lot of young people that are very passionate about it. They have great ideas. It's so much fun to see that. We just want everybody to come to the Master Gardener program who has that calling to be a Master Gardener, who wants to share that information with their neighbors and wants to help everybody just garden better and have our world be a little prettier and a little munchier and nummier.
Sounds like a lot of fun. I hope you get a lot of big turnout. Let's get back to our Smart Garden Show. I see we have a lot of callers, a lot of texters.
Okay.
So back to work, Teresa. Let's grab a phone call, first of all, from Rose Lee from Minneapolis. Thank you, Rose Lee, for hanging on the line. What can we do for you this morning?
Two quick questions. Do you need to water the lawn before they come to aerate it? And how do you get rid of quack grass?
Oh, boy, an easy question and a hard one. Yes, I would water the lawn first. It just kind of loosens it up a little bit. So maybe the day before or even 2 days before, just so that your grass is nice and plump and it's got all the nutrients it needs and all the water that it needs. Because when they aerate it, it's going to take a hit a little bit, but that will also help those cores to break down a little easier. Quack grass is hard to get rid of. It just runs across your lawn. Every little bit of root that you leave in there can start another plant. So be as aggressive as you can. You can pull it out and just really stay on top of it by pulling it out. if you find that you just have so much quackgrass, you may want to just kill the entire area there and then start over again. And in the fall, it's a great time to reseed your lawn and get that going. So I would suggest for those people that are battling quackgrass, go out there, hit the extension website, extension.umn.edu, and go to the lawn area. If you have crabgrass, don't worry about it. Crabgrass is an annual and just sets seeds. So just make it not go to seeds. So keep mowing it. It'll die with the frost, so you don't have to worry. But next year, you may want to use a pre-emergent. Quackgrass is a perennial aggressive grass.
Not good.
Not good.
All right. Let's grab another call. Catherine calling in from Blaine, Minnesota this morning. Catherine, thank you. What is your question?
Thank you. Hey, I have a... Do you know, Teresa, what a special begonia is? You know that new begonia that's out there, that beautiful, beautiful flowers, they flower all summer?
You know, not up on my begonias. About? I don't know that that is special one, but do you have a question on them, Catherine? Or?
Yes, I do. I wanted to know, is there a possibility, can you bring them in the wintertime, or do they...
Oh,
are they
yes.
Just,
No. Bring them in the wintertime. Treat them as a houseplant so that they can go in your areas where you may not need a heavy light or lots of light. So they can go in those areas that don't get quite as much sun as your full sun plants. And they make excellent houseplants. Yes.
How do I do that, Teresa? Do I have to? I've got a huge one. I don't have an area that... So how do I do that?
So you have some options there. You can take cuttings, and you can just take cuttings, and you can start cuttings of the plants inside the house. Then you're just starting with little plants for next year. Or you can cut back the begonia. What you want to do is make sure that just before you bring it in, you give it a good spray with water. You want to knock off any insects, any pests that it might be coming with. Clean the pot really well. Take all the debris off of the pot, the top of the pot, leaves and sticks that have gone in there, put them back in your garden. And then if you have other houseplants, segregate any plants you bring in from the outside for 2 to 3 weeks away from your other houseplants, just in case there's little critters coming in, spider mites or anything like that. You want to catch them on the plants that are transitioning back into the house. You want to take care of them there so they don't infect all your other plants. But you can learn about taking cuttings from your begonia. They're very easy to take cuttings of, leaf cuttings, or you can start stem cuttings in water, or leaf cuttings in damp sand or a Forsyth pot or something like that. Good luck, Catherine.
All right.
Bringing those in the winter is fun. Or in the fall, bring them in.
Hang on, Teresa. We're going to take a break for that summary forecast and be right back with more of our Smart Garden Show here on Newstalk A3O WCCO. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show. Denny Long here, along with Master Gardener Teresa Rooney, answering those lawn and garden questions this morning. I was going to tell you, and we've got a bunch of our text messages, that I had the chance to take that 3-mile drive last week at the Arboretum, followed by a trip to the Apple House.
Oh,
so
yay.
I had a twofer there on my heading out west.
Did you try some new apples?
I still have to say I think my favorite in order, Sweet Tango and Honeycrisp, are still at the top of the list. I haven't tried that First Kiss yet.
Yeah. Yeah, they're just so delicious, and I love going out there. And then you sometimes just get the ones that are numbered because they're just trying them out.
And there's some other food, too, you might want to sample, too.
There's a lot of good food out there. And, yeah, so go to the Apple House. It's open. Yay!
Hey, love it. All right, texter wants to know, is it good to deadhead a shrub rose this time of year?
You know, if you want to, you can. It's probably not going to set a lot more blooms because this is Minnesota. We're going to get winter eventually. If you're looking for any rose hips, definitely do not deadhead the roses if you're growing them for those nice rose hips that can be big and orange or red during the winter time. Otherwise, if you're not looking for a whole bunch more flowers, I would just let the rose just do its thing and not do much deadheading on it.
Well, here's a critter question for you. My apple trees have a lot of fruit, but a lot of wasps, too. Mm-hmm. How do I get rid of the wasps so I can pick my apples?
I go out there when the wasps aren't out there. So early in the morning before they're active, wait for a cool night, get out there in the late evening when they're not active anymore. That's about the only thing you can do. Some of those apples may have some cuts or something on them. They're starting to ferment, and the wasps are coming to get all that nice fermented sweet juice and eat the apples and everything else. Pick up anything that's on the ground. Clean that up really well. That will get rid of a lot of the wasps, because that's normally where they're coming from. They've attracted to the fruit that's decaying on the ground. So clean that up really well. And then do it on the shoulders of the day, early morning or late evening or mid-evening when you can still see. Maybe even put a headlamp on and go out there and pick them at night and give the neighbors something to talk about.
Absolutely. All right. Listener says this via text. I have a prairie fire crabapple tree, which is about 25 years old. It's beautiful in the spring. Always gets a leaf fungus, which drops half of the leaves. Is that common?
I think prairie fire is susceptible to apple scab. That's what you're seeing. The Extension website does have a good article on apple scab. We haven't seen it a lot for the past few years because we've been so droughty, but our really wet spring this year and wet early summer really promoted the spores over the fungus all around. Clean up the leaves and the apples really well, and if you can, thin the crown of the tree maybe in mid January, February, or early March of next year. Do some nice pruning on it. Open it up so it has more air circulation. If you find you're always getting apple scab and it's impacting the fruiting of the tree, then maybe the next year start a spray program if you want to go that direction. You'll use an apple tree spray, and you'll have to apply it at certain times before the buds open. After the flowers fall off, and then once 2 or 3 weeks later, if it's still wet and fungusy promoting weather, that should help a lot. That's the best you can do. Some plants are just more susceptible, some varieties of apples.
If you're just joining us, Master Gardener Teresa Rooney answering those lawn and garden questions here on our Smart Garden Show. Back to the phones we go. Bill is calling in from Elk River this morning. Thank you, Bill. What is your question?
Yeah, I planted 7 autumn blaze maple trees in our sand up here. I have used fertilizer, but unfortunately the deer found them to be very delicious right away when I planted them.
They are
so
delicious.
They're in like a dormant stage. They obviously have no leaves. I have continued to fertilize them, but do you think I have to worry about that I did not open the root bed up enough and that they're suffocating, or do you think it's just that the deer ate all the foliage off of them and now they're kind of dormant, and the stress of replanting them that I give them until next spring to see if they make it?
I would keep watering, stop the fertilizing, don't be fertilizing anything. Everybody, no fertilizing anything anymore in your yard except your annuals and your veggies. But go ahead, stop the fertilizing. Do keep them well watered if we go droughty. And what I would also do is start to think about fencing, how you can protect those maple trees, because the deer and the rabbits will browse on them and eat them all winter long. So you've got to put some cages up. You've got to put some something to protect the trunk of the tree and then to stop the deer from nibbling on it. See how they come out of dormancy in the spring and go from there. But it's more the impact of the deer browsing, and then make sure you're not over-fertilizing them. You don't want to do a lot of fertilizing when you first plant a tree. The tree has to learn where to find its food, so to speak. So you don't want to encourage all of the nutrients to be right near the tree. You want those roots to go out. So you can do some fertilizing if you want the first year, but after that, you shouldn't have to fertilize your tree. They should be finding the nutrients around. If you really think they need something, top dress with a little compost very lightly on the top, and the rains and the snow will just melt that into the soil for you. Good luck with that, Bill.
Dexter says this: I had a mystery plant from squirrels, turned out to be a pumpkin. The pumpkins are about 1 inch big right now. Any chance that we'll get one in time for Halloween?
No, I'm sorry. But, you know, it's a unique experience. And even if you got a big orange one, you know, it might not taste so good. But see what happens. Protect them from the frosts. And good luck. And, yeah, it's always fun to see what the squirrels bring into our yard. Yeah.
Back to the phones we go, Teresa. Cindy is hanging on the line there from Shakopee this morning. Thank you for your patience, Cindy. What is your question?
Yes, good morning. I have a papaya grass that I bought, and I wonder if I can overwinter that.
Okay, you're kind of breaking up there, Cindy.
I have a papyrus grass.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Can I overwinter that?
You can try. They don't. Go ahead. Try to bring it in. Again, you might want to move it into a little bit less sunny area right now so it gets used to a little bit less sunlight. If it's in a pot, just keep treating it as you've treated it all summer. And then just before you bring it in, give it a good spray with water. Clean up the soil. Make sure the pot is nice and clean so you're not bringing in any slugs or anything like that. Make sure the saucer's clean. Then bring it into the house and put it in your brightest, sunniest area. You may even want to give it a grow light all winter long because we normally get very dark even on our brightest days. It's not that bright. And lots of times you can bring them through. It doesn't always go so well in the winter, but give it a shot. You never know how long it'll grow for you. Good luck with that, Cindy.
Teresa Texter says this, can I trim my 6-foot-tall strawberry vanilla hydrangeas down to 3 feet now?
Oh, no. So what you want to do is wait until they're in the wintertime. Then you can go ahead and trim them. I would especially go to the Extension website, extension.umn.edu. Julie Weisenhorn has put together a really good information about hydrangeas and when to prune them to depend on the flowers. That's a really big cut. I would try to just maybe prune it back a little to shape in the spring, but do double check on the variety that you're growing. You don't want to prune anything a lot right now. Pruning things causes chemical reactions in the plant, and that tells the plant to grow in that area. So then the plant puts on new growth, and that new growth may not harden off in the wintertime, but also instead of adding nutrition to the roots of the plant for winter storage, you've taken some of that nutrition and you've put it into this new growth. So it's kind of a double hit on the plants. Protect the plants from deer and rabbit damage in the wintertime, and then just prune in the spring. And again, double check. If you're not too worried about flowers, then you don't have that much to worry about. But that's a pretty big thing. You may want to also consider if you want to keep that plant at 3 feet and it wants to be 8 feet, that's not the right plant for the right place. And you may want to just decide, maybe I can move this plant to where it can get big and beautiful and put in something smaller there.
I know we're going to take a quick break momentarily here, Teresa, but this listener says, what's the best way to stake heritage raspberries? Mine are out of control this year with all the rain. They're well over 6 feet tall, all grown together. I know it's too late to stake this year, but looking for ideas to implement next spring.
Yep, you know, I'd go online for some great ideas about staking. There's wiring, and you can put stakes in, then run a wire and put stakes so that they all kind of can be held up, so they're not flopping in your face with raspberry thorns all over them when you're trying to prune them. There's some interesting ideas online about how to stake them up. Normally, you're going to need some really good posts and maybe some wire, and that will be your best option. Good luck with that, and I'm glad you had success with your heritage raspberries.
Very good. We'll take a quick break. Be right back with the remaining minutes of our Smart Garden Show here on News Talk 830 WCCO. And welcome back to this portion of our Smart Garden Show again here every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour. This morning, if you're just joining us, Master Gardener Teresa Rooney is answering all of your lawn and garden questions. Teresa, there's, I think, a plant sale going on or about to, and folks want you to kind of mention quickly that Master Gardener program again.
Okay, so the Hennepin County Master Gardeners, thanks, Denny, we're having a houseplant sale on October 6th. That's a Sunday, and it will be at the Eisenhower Center in Hopkins. We'll have a lot of interesting plants, a lot of house plants, and master gardeners who know about house plants there. So you can probably even bring in questions about how to move plants if we still haven't had a frost by then, how to move plants in. But a house plant sale on Sunday, October 6th. And the deadline for becoming or applying to a master gardener program is October 1st. So you only have, 16, 17 days to do it, and get your application in. The Master Gardener Program is a wonderful program, and you get to hang out with the coolest people, the gardeners. So it's a win-win situation. Please become a Master Gardener if you like gardening.
Excellent. All right, Teresa, I know our time is limited. Let's see how many folks we can help out. Okay. Back to the phones. Lori, I think, has been hanging on there, calling from Minneapolis, I do believe. Lori, thank you. What is your question for Teresa?
Yes, I have a climbing rose bush, and it's about 5 feet tall by 6 feet wide, and it's kind of out of control. I'm wondering when I can prune that back and how much I can prune it back.
Okay, thanks for waiting, Lori. Yep, those climbing roses get a little rambunctious at times. If you don't have to prune it this fall because one cane is whipping you in the face or something like that every time you walk by, otherwise just tie them up lightly and then prune it first thing in the spring. You may lose some flowerings, but you can prune those back pretty hard first thing in the spring as soon as they start to come out of dormancy or as soon as you can get into the yard. You can even start pruning it in the end of February if you want, knock back some of those canes. If you have any canes that are dead, you can take those out at any time. But late winter, early spring would be the best time to do that. Good luck with that, Lori.
All right. Looking at a text, Teresa, that says, I have a large potato garden, but the black dirt is too heavy. What would you suggest for an additive to lighten that soil makeup?
Compost, and then some more compost. That would be your best bet.
Oh, all right. Is it too early to cut back daylilies, peonies, and hostas?
You know, if you're headed out of town next week for the winter, go ahead and prune them back. If they are still up and growing and you don't have to prune them back, leave them up and growing as long as possible. The more photosynthesizing they can do in the fall for longer, the better they come through winter because they're adding more nutrition to their roots and their root storage. So leave them up as long as they're green and growing. As soon as they're hit by a frost, you can cut them back. Or if you have to head out of town because you're leaving for the season, go ahead and cut them back the latest you can, and just give them a good drink of water and head out of town and have a wonderful warm winter.
All right. Mike in St. Paul sent this text. I have a crowded perennial garden that has flourished with all the rain this year. My iris has bloomed beautifully, but later this summer they were overrun by my red monarda, which the bees loved. Will my iris survive and come back next spring, or should I try to remove the monarda now that it's done blooming?
Move the monarda out of there so that the irises are probably still have some leaves so that they can still keep photosynthesizing. You want to pull that monarda back. Maybe just do as much as you can pulling it back just to get it out and give the irises some room to breathe and see the sunshine. And just make sure the plants don't get too rambunctious next year. Sometimes when they're so rambunctious and so beautiful, you have to cut things back or divide them. It's really hard, but you don't want one thug to take over from a plant that isn't as thuggy. So just gotta, you have to be a boss out there. You're the boss. Go ahead.
Yes, indeed. Good morning. Texter says, a pot with holes around the sides with hens and chick plants growing out of the holes and the top. Should this be brought inside for the winter?
I would probably bring it inside for the winter, or at least sink as much of the pot into the ground as you can. Wait for everything to become frozen with a good, and then mulch it really well. The above ground stuff gets really impacted by the freeze-thaw cycle. That's hard to say before coffee. The freeze and thaw cycle, every cycle it goes through, more roots die. So if you can get it more connected to the ground, or bring it into a cool area, a bright sunny area in your house, it'll be just fine.
Okay. This listener, Teresa, says, I planted canna lilies in pots this summer. When do I take the bulbs out of the pots, and how do I store them over winter?
I would go to the extension website. You can let them die down naturally with the frost and then lift them out and then you store them in a cool, dark location in your basement or in a closet that might have a wall that hits the outside of the house that doesn't get super warm. You want them to probably be between 40, 45 degrees. That's the kind of temperature you're looking at there. I would definitely go to the extension website and look up bulb storage so that you get that temperature and what kind of moisture they may or may not need over the winter, correct? Each bulb is a little bit different, and sometimes I get mixed up with all the temperatures, so I would definitely go to the bulb storage on extension.umn.edu.
A couple of minutes ago on the show, Teresa, here's an interesting one, at least to me. We have, texter says, had a bumpy lawn for a number of years. We had it redone and hydroseeded. It is now lumpier than ever. I suspect it is cicadas, as we've had issues every August. They were so bad this year that at certain times of the day, the noise was deafening. Do burrowing cicadas cause lumps?
That's a new one on me. I have never heard that.
Usually, we've heard earthworms do it.
Earthworms and compaction of soil. You may want to get that soil treated again with where they pull out all the plugs, get it aerated, and see if that helps to release some of the bumpiness. I have not heard the cicada issue. That's a new one on me.
Yeah. Okay, let's see. Why are so many of my large oak trees dying this year? Texter wants to know.
Oh, I would get an arborist out there right away. Just talk to a certified arborist. If you live in a city that has a city forester, have the city forester look at those to see if they have oak wilt or if they're running into something else. Get it treated as quickly as possible or get the trees taken out if they need to be taken out. Sometimes if you get oak wilt and your trees have grafted their roots together, that disease can travel from a tree to another tree via the roots too. So get a certified arborist to look at it without seeing it, and I'm not an arborist. I would definitely have a professional look at your oak trees.
Okay, let's do one more lawn question, then we have to run. If I put down fall seed, when can I put down fall weed and feed?
You're not going to put down a fall weed and feed. You would do a fall winterizer, and you don't want to put that on your newly seeded lawn unless you have had to mow that lawn two or three times. If that baby grass is not big enough to have had to be mowed two or three times, it will get burned by your winterizer.
Yep. All right, Teresa, thank you for another great job. We appreciate that.
Thank you.
We'll remind folks, get to the Arboretum, get to the university website, extension.umn.edu, and become a master gardener. Have a lot of fun.
Master gardener. And get to the Apple House.
The Apple House, absolutely. Thanks, Teresa.
Thanks, everybody.
Talk soon.
Bye-bye.
Master Gardener Teresa Rooney. Now, get those home improvement questions ready. Andy Lindis will be answering those very questions coming along next hour here on CCO. High today near 78, maybe a few showers here and there, but tomorrow, sunny near 86. Stay with us here on News Talk 830. This is WCCO.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase.
Go to Shopify.com/Odyssey Podcast to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/Odyssey Podcast.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Portrait pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
And a good Saturday morning to you. Welcome to another edition of our Smart Garden Show this morning. Master Gardener Teresa Rooney answering all of those lawn and garden questions. Teresa, good morning.
Good morning, Denny. It's so nice to be here with you today.
Well, it's always great to have you on the radio with us, and the listeners love it as well. How about this summer weather?
We have had pretty nice summer so far, and this weather is absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, really is, to continue. If you have, and if you're a regular listener to the show, you know how busy we tend to get. A lot of questions for our listeners, not only phones, but text messages as well. So if you do have any kind of a lawn or garden question, we'd love to hear from you. You want to call Teresa or send a text. Either way, just one number will get you either. 651-461-9226. Let's see, where do we begin here? All right. When my lilacs were hit by this virus, the leaves turned black and dried up. It looked like I lost the tree, but now, out of the blue, I have green leaves coming back and have some lilacs blooming. What's going on? We're hearing a lot about this.
We're hearing a lot about this. So if your lilac was hit with one of those two fungal lilac diseases, just clean up all of the leaves as much as you can, the leaves that fell. And then just treat the plant as gently as you can. If we go droughty, give it some water. Don't fertilize it. Don't do any major pruning, but you can take out any dead stuff. And we're seeing a lot of reblooming lilacs and other spring blooming plants. You know, it's just enjoy the extra blooms. The plants are as confused as we are about the weather. And they're not going to bloom a full bloom like they do in the spring. But what blooms now, that again won't bloom next spring. So you'll have a little less maybe flowers next year. But your plants should be fine. Just treat them carefully. Give them all the love you can. And go to the Extension website, extension.umn.edu. We talk about the reblooming of the spring plants. And there is also some links for the lilac disease.
All right, very good. Let us grab a phone call, Teresa. Jim is checking in from Maplewood this morning, I believe. Jim, thank you. What is your question for Teresa?
I have a question about two questions about emerald ash borer. I heard a guy from a tree service saying that he cut down a tree that had multiple tags on it for being treated for emerald ash borer, but the bug got in anyway. And the other question is, this man also stated that he'd seen emerald ash borer in other trees. I don't, just any reaction on that.
Okay, so when emerald ash borer first came out, I thought it was supposed to go to other trees sometimes too. I suppose the insects can go to another tree if there's no ash trees around. They won't be as effective, and so I don't think that's a major worry that we have yet. And as to being treating your tree and it still gets emerald ash borer and then has to be taken down, the treatments are as preventative as they can be, but they're not 100% guarantee. So it can happen. I had that with my elm tree, obviously not emerald ash borer, but my elm tree did get infected with the Dutch elm disease, even though I was treating it. It just happens sometimes the trees are so stressed or the pest is so present that it actually overcomes some of that preventative that the people have put into the trees. So it can happen. It may happen, and it's just something that we have to deal with and plant a variety of trees to keep our urban forests as healthy as possible.
Very good. 651-461-9226. Texter says, any tips for reusing the soil from my pots?
Oh, sure. First of all, you don't have to reuse, you don't have to dump the whole thing. Next year, if you haven't had any diseases in there, you can just take out maybe a third of it, dump all the pots in a big container, mix them all up with some new soil, maybe some new compost, new potting soil and new compost, and then refill all your pots so you're not having to refill the entire pot every year. If it has a disease in it, then you do want to get rid of that soil and not reuse it. Otherwise, you can just, and if you want to start with fresh soil, you can just sprinkle that soil around your shrubs in a very small layer. You can also sprinkle it on your lawn in a low area if you want, and then seed over that. It's a great time to be reseeding your lawns. So you can reuse the soil if it's not been filled with diseases and other parts of your yard if you want to, or just amend and start over fresh next year with old soil and partially new soil.
Very good. Another phone call. This one, Ken, calling in from White Bear Lake this morning. Ken, thanks for calling. What's your question for Teresa?
Yes, I planted some cucumbers in some containers, and the foliage is beautiful, loaded with yellow flowers on one side of a cucumber.
Oh, no.
What's going on there?
Well, you want to make sure that the flowers you're seeing are male flowers, or I'm sorry, female flowers, because you need some males and some female flowers. If the pollinators are not coming in to pollinate, you have to play bee and you have to pollinate. So you have to take a male flower and brush it up against a bunch of female flowers so that you can transfer that pollen to the female flowers so that the cucumbers can start. Sometimes really hot weather prevents the bees from flying, the pollinators from flying. Rainy weather, if you just keep having rain and rain and rain, that will do it. And if the plant is not producing enough flowers, male and female, you're not going to get the pollination either. So those are some things that you can look for. Ken, good luck with that.
Okay. Listener wants to know, when should I move and divide hardy permanently outdoor hibiscus plants, spring before growth appears or fall after the frost?
I would do it the very first thing in the spring. And what you're going to find, though, is that those hibiscus are very, they wake up very late. They come out of dormancy very late. You sometimes don't even see them until the end of June, mid-June. So mark them well and then dig carefully in the spring as soon as the ground is thawed out. And so you don't chop into the roots too much. And then just lift them and move them to where you want them, a nice sunny area with a nice fertile soil, and you should be fine.
Okay. Lawn question this morning, Teresa. What can be done about rust in the lawn?
Well, what is rust? It's a fungal kind of disease. So think of rust on your car. It's because it gets wet, it gets kind of damaged. So what you can do is, if you are overhead watering or you have a sprinkler system, make sure it's going off early in the morning if you need it, and that it sprinkles and gives your lawn a good drink, and then it can dry out that day. You don't want to water in the night so the foliage stays wet for a long time. That's the best thing to do, and just try to keep it from being wet all the time. That's the best thing to do. I would also say go to the Extension website, extension.umn.edu, and click on the lawn page, and you can find some really good information about that, about how to handle the rust, too. If you are mowing from one area to another, maybe do the rusty area last, and then clean your lawnmower very well and very carefully so you're not moving that rust all throughout your yard, too. And never cut the grass when it's wet.
All right. Interesting. Don't cut the lawn when it's wet. Interesting.
Yeah, you don't want to be in your garden when it's wet. You don't want to be playing with plants when they're wet, because the foliage, you can kind of damage the foliage, but you're also moving all those diseases around really easy as you move through the system.
All right. Teresa, hang on. We're going to take a bit of a break here and be right back. If you have any kind of a lawn or a garden question for Master Gardener Teresa Rooney, call us or text us at 651-461-9226. Few showers reported here in the Twin Cities. Our temperature reading still 69 degrees. Heading to near 78 today, near 86 tomorrow. Stay with us here on News Talk 830 WCCO. And good Saturday morning to you. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show here on CCO every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour. This morning, Master Gardener Teresa Rooney is answering those lawn and garden questions. And Teresa, you and I always like to talk about the Master Gardener program, and maybe for folks that maybe missed it, maybe interested, give us a little bit of background.
I love the Master Gardener program. I will talk your ear off, but I'll try not to do that. But this is a really exciting time of year for the Master Gardeners, because this is when we've opened up registration for everybody to become a Master Gardener. And a Master Gardener is somebody who loves to learn about gardening, loves to share that information with their neighbors, and loves to learn scientifically based, research based information that they want to share with their community. And if you think that's you, then please go to the Extension website and click on How to Become a Master Gardener. We'll talk you right through it. The applications close by October 1st, so we have to have your application in by October 31st. I'm sorry, October 1st, not the 31st, October 1st. So you only have 16, 17 days, whatever it is. You don't have a lot of time. But you apply to the Master Gardener program. If you're accepted into the program, you will be given a lot of support. There's a core course that you take. It's 40 to 60 hours it's going to take you. It's all self-driven on the computer. There's a lot of people to help you. If you don't have good computer skills, or if you have really good computer skills but you have some questions, Master Gardeners will meet. There's a lot of support. We have here in Hennepin County, we have a good internship program. So we match you with people that want to be your intern, your friend, the first 1 or 2 years when you're becoming a Master Gardener. So the first year you would go through core course, you would take all your tests. They're very easy. They're open book. Don't worry about it. It's easy to do. Then you do your 50 hours of volunteer work, which seems like a lot, but it's very easy. There's lots of opportunities and lots of supports, whether you take 1 or 2 years to complete that. And then you become a certified Master Gardener. And every year after that, you only need 25 hours of volunteer work, but most people do a lot more because they love it so much. So go online. There's scholarship help available. This program is open to anybody in the state of Minnesota. So go online. There is background checks. If you're going to work with children, you do have to work with do a children work safely or whatever it is, working with children program. But there's a lot of things that are just wonderful. I can't say enough good enough things about it. And you get to hang out with other people who might be as geeky as you are about gardening. Which is our secret kind of passion.
So get online. Extension.umn.edu, the Master Gardener program. Now, I want to ask you, and I realize the term younger is relative, but are there younger people and maybe more guys getting involved here?
There are. It used to be mostly just older people after retirement, and all they wanted to do was grow roses. And now we have a wide variety of people. So if you have a passion for local food or food justice or community gardens or growing roses or growing the perfect apple, you can funnel that passion. You can learn more about it. And we're getting a lot of young people that are very passionate about it. They have great ideas. It's so much fun to see that. We just want everybody to come to the Master Gardener program who has that calling to be a Master Gardener, who wants to share that information with their neighbors and wants to help everybody just garden better and have our world be a little prettier and a little munchier and nummier.
Sounds like a lot of fun. I hope you get a lot of big turnout. Let's get back to our Smart Garden Show. I see we have a lot of callers, a lot of texters.
Okay.
So back to work, Teresa. Let's grab a phone call, first of all, from Rose Lee from Minneapolis. Thank you, Rose Lee, for hanging on the line. What can we do for you this morning?
Two quick questions. Do you need to water the lawn before they come to aerate it? And how do you get rid of quack grass?
Oh, boy, an easy question and a hard one. Yes, I would water the lawn first. It just kind of loosens it up a little bit. So maybe the day before or even 2 days before, just so that your grass is nice and plump and it's got all the nutrients it needs and all the water that it needs. Because when they aerate it, it's going to take a hit a little bit. But that will also help those cores to break down a little easier. quackgrass is hard to get rid of. It just runs across your lawn. Every little bit of root that you leave in there can start another plant. So be as aggressive as you can. You can pull it out and just really stay on top of it by pulling it out. If you find that you just have so much quackgrass, you may want to just kill the entire area there and then start over again. And in the fall, it's a great time to reseed your lawn and get that going. So I would suggest for those people that are battling quackgrass, go out there, hit the extension website, extension.umn.edu, and go to the lawn area. If you have crabgrass, don't worry about it. Crabgrass is an annual and just sets seeds. So just make it not go to seeds. So keep mowing it. It'll die with the frost, so you don't have to worry. But next year, you may want to use a pre-emergent. Quackgrass is a perennial aggressive grass.
Not good.
Not good.
All right. Let's grab another call. Catherine calling in from Blaine, Minnesota this morning. Catherine, thank you. What is your question?
Thank you. Hey, I have a... Do you know, Teresa, what a special begonia is? You know that new begonia that's out there, that beautiful, beautiful flowers, they flower all summer?
I'm not up on my begonias. I don't know that a special one, but do you have a question on them, Catherine? Or?
Yes, I do. I wanted to know, is there a possibility, can you bring them in the wintertime, or do they...
No. Bring them in the wintertime. Treat them as a houseplant so that they can go in your areas where you may not need a heavy light or lots of light. So they can go in those areas that don't get quite as much sun as your full sun plants. And they make excellent houseplants. Yes.
How do I do that, Teresa? Do I have to? I mean, I've got a huge one. I don't have an area that... So how do I do that?
So you have some options there. You can take cuttings, and you can just take cuttings, and you can start cuttings of the plants inside the house. Then you're just starting with little plants for next year. Or you can cut back the begonia. What you want to do is make sure that just before you bring it in, you give it a good spray with water. You want to knock off any insects, any pests that it might be coming with. Clean the pot really well. Take all the debris off of the pot, the top of the pot, leaves and sticks that have gone in there, put them back in your garden. And then if you have other houseplants, segregate any plants you bring in from the outside for 2 to 3 weeks away from your other houseplants, just in case there's little critters coming in, spider mites or anything like that. You want to catch them on the plants that are transitioning back into the house. You want to take care of them there so they don't infect all your other plants. But you can learn about taking cuttings from your begonia. They're very easy to take cuttings of, leaf cuttings, or you can start stem cuttings in water, or leaf cuttings in damp sand or a Forsyth pot or something like that. Good luck, Catherine.
All right.
Bringing those in the winter is fun. Or in the fall, bring them in.
Hang on, Teresa. We're going to take a break for that summary forecast and be right back with more of our Smart Garden Show here on Newstalk A3O WCCO. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show. Denny Long here, along with Master Gardener Teresa Rooney, answering those lawn and garden questions this morning. I was going to tell you, and we've got a bunch of our text messages, that I had the chance to take that 3-mile drive last week at the Arboretum, followed by a trip to the Apple House.
Oh, so yay.
I had a twofer there on my heading out west.
Did you try some new apples?
I still have to say I think my favorite in order, Sweet Tango and Honeycrisp, are still at the top of the list. I haven't tried that First Kiss yet.
Yeah. They're just so delicious, and I love going out there, and then you sometimes just get the ones that are numbered because they're just trying them out.
And there's some other food, too, you might want to sample, too.
There's a lot of good food out there. And so go to the Apple House. It's open. Yay!
Hey, love it. All right. Texter wants to know, is it good to deadhead a shrub rose this time of year?
You know, if you want to, you can. It's probably not going to set a lot more blooms because this is Minnesota, and we're going to get winter eventually. If you're looking for any rose hips, definitely do not deadhead the roses if you're growing them for those nice rose hips that can be big and orange or red during the winter time. Otherwise, if you're not looking for a whole bunch more flowers, I would just let the rose just do its thing and not do much deadheading on it.
Well, here's a critter question for you. My apple trees have a lot of fruit, but a lot of wasps, too. Mm-hmm. How do I get rid of the wasps so I can pick my apples?
I go out there when the wasps aren't out there. So early in the morning before they're active, wait for a cool night, get out there in the late evening when they're not active anymore. That's about the only thing you can do. Some of those apples may have some cuts or something on them. They're starting to ferment, and the wasps are coming to get all that nice fermented sweet juice and eat the apples and everything else. Pick up anything that's on the ground. Clean that up really well. That will get rid of a lot of the wasps, because that's normally where they're coming from. They've attracted to the fruit that's decaying on the ground. So clean that up really well. And then do it on the shoulders of the day, early morning or late evening or mid-evening when you can still see. Maybe even put a headlamp on and go out there and pick them at night and give the neighbors something to talk about.
Absolutely. All right. Listener says this via text. I have a prairie fire crabapple tree, which is about 25 years old. It's beautiful in the spring. Always gets a leaf fungus, which drops half of mm-hmm. the leaves. Is that common?
I think prairie fire is susceptible to apple scab. That's what you're seeing. The Extension website does have a good article on apple scab. We haven't seen it a lot for the past few years because we've been so droughty, but our really wet spring this year and wet early summer really promoted the spores over the fungus all around. Clean up the leaves and the apples really well, and if you can, thin the crown of the tree maybe in mid January, February, or early March of next year. Do some nice pruning on it. Open it up so it has more air circulation. If you find you're always getting apple scab and it's impacting the fruiting of the tree, then maybe the next year start a spray program if you want to go that direction. You'll use an apple tree spray, and you'll have to apply it at certain times before the buds open. After the flowers fall off, and then once 2 or 3 weeks later, if it's still wet and fungusy promoting weather, that should help a lot. That's the best you can do. Some plants are just more susceptible, some varieties of apples.
If you're just joining us, Master Gardener Teresa Rooney answering those lawn and garden questions here in our Smart Garden Show. Back to the phones we go. Bill is calling in from Elk River this morning. Thank you, Bill. What is your question?
Yeah, I planted 7 autumn blaze maple trees in our sand up here. I have used fertilizer, but unfortunately the deer found them to be very delicious right away when I planted them.
They are
delicious. So they're in like a dormant stage. They obviously have no leaves. I have continued to fertilize them, but do you think I have to worry about that I did not open the root bed up enough and that they're suffocating, or do you think it's just that the deer ate all the foliage off of them and now they're kind of dormant, and the stress of replanting them that I give them until next spring to see if they make it?
I would keep watering, stop the fertilizing, don't be fertilizing anything. Everybody, no fertilizing anything anymore in your yard except your annuals and your veggies. But go ahead, stop the fertilizing. Do keep them well watered if we go droughty. And what I would also do is start to think about fencing, how you can protect those maple trees, because the deer and the rabbits will browse on them and eat them all winter long. So you've got to put some cages up. You've got to put some something to protect the trunk of the tree and then to stop the deer from nibbling on it. See how they come out of dormancy in the spring and go from there. But it's more the impact of the deer browsing, and then make sure you're not over fertilizing them. You don't want to do a lot of fertilizing when you first plant a tree. The tree has to learn where to find its food, so to speak. So you don't want to encourage all of the nutrients to be right near the tree. You want those roots to go out. So you can do some fertilizing if you want the first year, but after that, you shouldn't have to fertilize your tree. They should be finding the nutrients around. If you really think they need something, top dress with a little compost very lightly on the top, and the rains and the snow will just melt that into the soil for you. Good luck with that, Bill.
Texter says this, I had a mystery plant from squirrels, turned out to be a pumpkin. The pumpkins are about 1 inch big right now. Any chance that we'll get one in time for Halloween?
No, I'm sorry. But, you know, it's a unique experience. And even if you got a big orange one, you know, it might not taste so good. But see what happens. Protect them from the frosts. And good luck. And, yeah, it's always fun to see what the squirrels bring into our yard. Yeah.
Back to the phones we go, Teresa. Cindy is hanging on the line there from Shakopee this morning. Thank you for your patience, Cindy. What is your question?
Yes, good morning. I have a papaya. And I'm wondering if I overwinter that.
Okay, you're kind of breaking up there, Cindy.
I have a papyrus grass.
Oh yes. Mm-hmm. Yep.
You can go overwinter that?
You can try. They don't. Go ahead and try to bring it in. Again, you might want to move it into a little bit less sunny area right now so it gets used to a little bit less sunlight. If it's in a pot, just keep treating it as you've treated it all summer. And then just before you bring it in, give it a good spray with water, clean up the soil, make sure the pot is nice and clean so you're not bringing in any slugs or anything like that. Make sure the saucer's clean. Then bring it into the house and put it in your brightest, sunniest area. You may even want to give it a grow light all winter long because we normally get very dark even on our brightest days. It's not that bright. And lots of times you can bring them through. It doesn't always go so well in the winter, but give it a shot. You never know how long it'll grow for you. Good luck with that, Cindy.
Teresa Texter says this, can I trim my 6-foot-tall strawberry vanilla hydrangeas down to 3 feet now?
Oh, no. So what you want to do is wait until they're in the wintertime. Then you can go ahead and trim them. I would especially go to the Extension website, extension.umn.edu. Julie Weisenhorn has put together a really good information about hydrangeas and when to prune them to depend on the flowers. That's a really big cut. I would try to just maybe prune it back a little to shape in the spring, but do double check on the variety that you're growing. You don't want to prune anything a lot right now. Pruning things causes chemical reactions in the plant, and that tells the plant to grow in that area. So then the plant puts on new growth, and that new growth may not harden off in the wintertime, but also instead of adding nutrition to the roots of the plant for winter storage, you've taken some of that nutrition and you've put it into this new growth. So it's kind of a double hit on the plants. Protect the plants from deer and rabbit damage in the wintertime, and then just prune in the spring. And again, double check. If you're not too worried about flowers, then you don't have that much to worry about. But that's a pretty big thing. You may want to also consider, if you want to keep that plant at 3 feet and it wants to be 8 feet, that's not the right plant for the right place. And you may want to just decide, maybe I can move this plant to where it can get big and beautiful and put in something smaller there.
I know we're going to take a quick break momentarily here, Teresa, but this listener says, what's the best way to stake heritage raspberries? Mine are out of control this year with all the rain. They're well over 6 feet tall, all grown together. I know it's too late to stake this year, but looking for ideas to implement next spring.
Yep, you know, I'd go online for some great ideas about staking. There's wiring, and you can put stakes in and then run a wire and put stakes so that they all kind of can be held up, so they're not flopping in your face with raspberry thorns all over them and when you're trying to prune them. There's some interesting ideas online about how to stake them up. Normally, you're going to need some really good posts and maybe some wire, and that will be your best option. Good luck with that, and I'm glad you had success with your heritage raspberries.
Very good. We'll take a quick break. Be right back with the remaining minutes of our Smart Garden Show here on News Talk 830 WCCO. And welcome back to this portion of our Smart Garden Show again here every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour. This morning, if you're just joining us, Master Gardener Teresa Rooney is answering all of your lawn and garden questions. Teresa, there's, I think, a plant sale going on or about to, and folks want you to kind of mention quickly that Master Gardener program again.
Okay, so the Hennepin County Master Gardeners, thanks, Denny, we're having a houseplant sale on October 6th. That's a Sunday, and it will be at the Eisenhower Center in Hopkins. We'll have a lot of interesting plants, a lot of house plants, and master gardeners who know about house plants there. So you can probably even bring in questions about how to move plants if we still haven't had a frost by then, how to move plants in. But a house plant sale on Sunday, October 6th. And the deadline for becoming or applying to a master gardener program is October 1st. So you only have, 16, 17 days to do it. And get your application in. The Master Gardener Program is a wonderful program, and you get to hang out with the coolest people, the gardeners. So it's a win-win situation. Please become a Master Gardener if you like gardening.
Excellent. All right, Teresa, I know our time is limited. Let's see how many folks we can help out. Okay. Back to the phones. Lori, I think, has been hanging on there, calling from Minneapolis, I do believe. Lori, thank you. What is your question for Teresa?
Yes, I have a climbing rose bush, and it's about 5 feet tall by 6 feet wide, and it's kind of out of control. I'm wondering when I can prune that back and how much I can prune it back.
Okay, thanks for waiting, Lori. Those climbing roses get a little rambunctious at times. If you don't have to prune it this fall because one cane is whipping you in the face or something like that every time you walk by, otherwise just tie them up lightly and then prune it first thing in the spring. You may lose some flowerings, but you can prune those back pretty hard first thing in the spring as soon as they start to come out of dormancy or as soon as you can get into the yard. You can even start pruning it in the end of February if you want, knock back some of those canes. If you have any canes that are dead, you can take those out at any time, but late winter, early spring would be the best time to do that. Good luck with that, Lori.
All right. Looking at a text, Teresa, that says, I have a large potato garden, but the black dirt is too heavy. What would you suggest for an additive to lighten that soil makeup?
Compost, and then some more compost. That would be your best bet.
Oh, all right. Is it too early to cut back daylilies, peonies, and hostas?
You know, if you're headed out of town next week for the winter, go ahead and prune them back. If they are still up and growing and you don't have to prune them back, leave them up and growing as long as possible. The more photosynthesizing they can do in the fall for longer, the better they come through winter because they're adding more nutrition to their roots and their root storage. So leave them up as long as they're green and growing. As soon as they're hit by a frost, you can cut them back. Or if you have to head out of town because you're leaving for the season, go ahead and cut them back the latest you can, and just give them a good drink of water and head out of town and have a wonderful warm winter.
All right. Mike in St. Paul sent this text. I have a crowded perennial garden that has flourished with all the rain this year. My irises bloom beautifully, but later this summer they were overrun by my red monarda, which the bees loved. Will my iris survive and come back next spring, or should I try to remove the monarda now that it's done blooming?
Move the monarda out of there so that the irises are probably still have some leaves so that they can still keep photosynthesizing. You want to pull that monarda back. Maybe just do as much as you can pulling it back just to get it out and give the irises some room to breathe and see the sunshine. And just make sure the plants don't get too rambunctious next year. Sometimes when they're so rambunctious and so beautiful, you have to cut things back or divide them. It's really hard, but you don't want one thug to take over from a plant that isn't as thuggy. So just you have to be a boss out there. You're the boss. Go ahead.
Yes, indeed. Good morning. Texter says, a pot with holes around the sides with hens and chick plants growing out of the holes and the top. Should this be brought inside for the winter?
I would probably bring it inside for the winter, or at least sink as much of the pot into the ground as you can. Wait for everything to become frozen with a good, and then mulch it really well. The above ground stuff gets really impacted by the freeze thaw cycle. That's hard to say before coffee. The freeze and thaw cycle. Every cycle it goes through, more roots die. So if you can get it more connected to the ground or bring it into a cool area, a bright sunny area in your house, it'll be just fine.
Okay. This listener, Teresa, says, I planted canna lilies in pots this summer. When do I take the bulbs out of the pots, and how do I store them over winter?
I would go to the extension website. You can let them die down naturally with the frost and then lift them out, and then you store them in a cool, dark location in your basement or in a closet that might have a wall that hits the outside of the house that doesn't get super warm. You want them to probably be between 40, 45 degrees. That's the kind of temperature you're looking at there. I would definitely go to the extension website and look up bulb storage so that you get that temperature and what kind of moisture they may or may not need over the winter, correct? Each bulb is a little bit different, and sometimes I get mixed up with all the temperatures, so I would definitely go to the bulb storage on extension.umn.edu.
A couple of minutes ago on the show, Teresa, here's an interesting one, at least to me. We have, texter says, had a bumpy lawn for a number of years. We had it redone and hydroseeded. It is now lumpier than ever. I suspect it is cicadas, as we've had issues every August. They were so bad this year that at certain times of the day, the noise was deafening. Do burrowing cicadas cause lumps?
That's a new one on me. I have never heard that. Usually,
we've heard earthworms do it.
Earthworms and compaction of soil. You may want to run, get that soil treated again with were they to pull out all the plugs, get it aerated, and see if that helps to release some of the bumpiness. I have not heard the cicada issue. That's a new one on me.
Yeah. Okay, let's see. Why are so many of my large oak trees dying this year? Texter wants to know.
Oh, I would get an arborist out there right away. Just talk to a certified arborist. If you live in a city that has a city forester, have the city forester look at those to see if they have oak wilt or if they're running into something else. Get it treated as quickly as possible, or get the trees taken out if they need to be taken out. Sometimes if you get oak wilt and your trees have grafted their roots together, that disease can travel from a tree to another tree via the roots too. So get a certified arborist to look at it. Without seeing it, and I'm not an arborist, I would definitely have a professional look at your oak trees.
Okay, let's do one more lawn question, then we have to run. If I put down fall seed, when can I put down fall weed and feed?
You're not going to put down a fall weed and feed. You would do a fall winterizer, and you don't want to put that on your newly seeded lawn unless you've had to mow that lawn two or three times. If that baby grass is not big enough to have had to be mowed two or three times, it will get burned by your winterizer.
Yep. All right, Teresa, thank you for another great job. We appreciate that.
And
we'll remind folks, get to the Arboretum, get to the university website, extension.umn.edu, and become a master gardener. Have
become
a lot of fun.
Master gardener. And get to the Apple House.
The Apple House, absolutely. Thanks, Teresa.
Thanks,
we'll
everybody.
Talk soon.
Bye-bye.
Master Gardener Teresa Rooney. Now, get those home improvement questions ready. Andy Lindis will be answering those very questions coming along next hour here on CCO. High today near 78, maybe a few showers here and there, but tomorrow, sunny near 86. Stay with us here on News Talk 830. This is WCCO.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norsides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.